This is Shirley Kissler, and I am doing an interview for the Decatur Public Library, and I'm interviewing Orville Graham, and it is a kind of nippy March 1st of 2017, and we're here in Orv's office. This is the third part of Orv Graham interviews. There's one that's just written. Well, Bill Larrick just finished one and kind of got Orv being born in Indiana and brought him up to date now. And so I'm going to kind of go over some different things that Bill didn't have time for. There is, well, hello.
Hello, Shirley.
Nice to see you, my friend. And you were talking a little bit about the Decatur celebration.
I was.
You were.
In my conversation with Bill?
With Bill. Uh-huh. I think, but it was just barely mentioned. And I think I remember you standing on the stage declaring that the first Decatur celebration is now open. Was that you?
That sounds like, yeah.
Okay.
I think so. I was the MC of the opening ceremonies at the first Decatur celebration. In fact, I did 23 of the first 25.
Oh, my goodness. Well, how did that start? How did the celebration start and your involvement in it?
My involvement in it is how I'll tell you what
okay.
I'll tell you. Mm-hmm. I had been owner-operator of a radio station, an AM-FM station in Shelbyville. Mm-hmm. After having left WSOY, I was with WSOY for many, many years. I left there and bought a radio station of my own, was tempted back to WSOY, and they made me an offer I couldn't refuse. And I decided to come back to WSOY, not as an air personality, but as general manager. And I had been back about a week when I got a call from Jim Macy. Mm-hmm. Jim Macy called me and said, Orv, Gary Anderson and I would like to have lunch with you. Gary Anderson at that time was the mayor of Decatur. And so I said, okay. We met for lunch at the Decatur Club. And when I arrived, they were already at the table, and there was a third gentleman with them, whom I had not met yet. Turned out to be a fellow named Fred Puglia. Fred Puglia was from Springfield. He had been the developer of an event in Springfield which was called the Lincoln Fest.
Okay, I'm familiar with that, yeah.
And Lincoln Fest didn't last very long. He built it and was tremendously successful for just a short, 3 years?
Oh, yes. It
two
didn't
or three
last
years.
Long.
Yeah. And after his work with Lincoln Fest ended, he was traveling around central Illinois trying to find another place to build a festival.
Oh, okay.
He went to Peoria. He thought it'd be a river fest, and they didn't think it fit them. He went to Bloomington. They didn't think it fit. He went to Champaign. They didn't think it fit. He hadn't come to Decatur because, if I remember the circumstances right, he was afraid there had been too many disputes between labor and management in Decatur.
What year was this? Do you remember it all, Orv?
1985. What you're looking at on my wall, Shirley, is the original license plate from the original Decatur celebration, which was 1986.
And my mouth is open. That is so cool. It is that license plate from that
yes.
first celebration in 85.
It was on my car. First celebration was in 86.
Okay.
The date of this conversation was 85, November of 85.
Okay.
I had just come back to Decatur a short time. And Fred Puglia, when he got no takers in Peoria and Bloomington and Champaign. He was still looking for something to give him an mm-hmm. income. Mm-hmm. And he came to Gary Anderson at Indicator. Gary Anderson said, yes, we have had those difficulties. And now it is time for us to find a positive. we need to look better. We need to sound. We need to have a good image, which we do not have because partially because of those difficulties that we've had, strikes, etc. Mm-hmm. And so he thought the idea was good. And he and Jim Macy and Fred Puglia outlined this whole thing to me at lunch that day, and they said, what do you think? I said, I think you think you guys are nuts. And then I said, and why are you telling me these things? And Gary Anderson's response was, because I want you to make it happen. I said, what do you mean, make it happen? He said, that's it, make it happen. He said, I'll give you every bit of support I can give you. Make it happen. I thought about it for a minute or so, and I said, I've got a new job, and I'm very busy. I can't possibly start until maybe February. That's all right.
They wanted you, obviously.
I considered it, by the way, a tremendous compliment at the time. And I did take it. And here's what happened. Within 2 weeks, I started getting calls from people saying, hey, I've heard about this. I've heard about that. What about this and what about that? And can you give me an idea of what this is going to be all about? And then, gee, I was at work already long before I had intended to be. At that point, one of my major responsibilities was creating income in the radio station, advertising.
Oh, okay.
And this program, the Decatur Celebration, required advertising dollars to support it. You know, you get sponsors.
Right.
And so I said, that's one thing I cannot be involved with. That part of it I cannot be involved with. I would consider it a conflict of interest.
I wouldn't have thought of that, but that's right. That's big.
And so they agreed to that. And along about January, January 2nd, or early in January, might even have been late December, I'm not sure. I get a call at home on a Sunday afternoon from someone named Mrs. Puglia, Fred Puglia's wife. I had not yet met her. And she said, Fred has an appointment tomorrow morning at 10 with the Millican National Bank president to talk about sponsorship of our parade that we're going to have at the celebration. And Fred has a problem. I said, what's the problem? She said, he fell on the ice and broke his ankle, and at this moment he is in St. John's Hospital.
You're laughing.
And I, not at Fred's, misery, I'm not laughing at that.
Oh my gosh.
She said, can you possibly make that call?
Oh, yeah.
Well, somebody had to make it, so yeah, okay.
Now
so
excuse me, just a second. You're in charge of a board of volunteers, and Fred Puglia does the... hires the bands, and you didn't do that, did you?
I did not. I had some influence in some of it, but
of
I did not. Fred was the producer director of the event. So good at it.
Oh, yeah.
So good at it. He didn't need my help at it.
Okay, so your job is to rally us, Decatur.
That says it very well. My job was to build the board, build the bylaws, get the organization up and running. All of the accounting, the finances, and so forth.
Just a little bit of time.
and help with every little piece. And get the political wins on our side, which required a little bit of TLC. Because not everybody who was a community leader was in favor of this.
Oh, didn't know that. See, people don't know any of this, or as far as what makes that celebration go. And there you were, starting from scratch with nothing.
I would I would sometimes be at a meeting and come back to my office and have 12 phone calls waiting for me.
I thought you were going to say cocktails.
No. I didn't have time for that. I'd have 12 phone calls waiting.
Gosh.
And before I'd get through them, I'd have 12 more. And it was just constant. Just constant. You can't believe the number of problems that that we had to solve going in. Simple things such as how do you get the electricity? How much electricity do you need and where do you need it? And how do you make that happen?
And how do you build stages?
And how
those
do you
huge
build stage?
Stages.
How do you build ticket booths?
Oh.
Ah.
Oh, and who prints
and
those
where
tickets?
Where do you put the money? When people come and buy those tickets from you at those ticket booths, where do you put the money?
Oh.
You don't have cash registers. What do you do?
You're like, you're directing a major musical here.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
well, it,
the background stuff is...
We had, we had a lot of problems.
Why did you pick that date, that first weekend in August? You had to have a hand in that.
No, I approved it. I believe Fred picked the date, and it had to do with the dates of other events. It's finding a weekend still in the summertime that didn't conflict with the Macon County Fair or with...
State Fair.
Yeah, State Fair, all those kinds of things.
Okay, all right. It's worked out?
Yeah, I think it has worked out
so well. So you did 23 out of the first 25?
I emceed 23
you
of the emceed. First 25.
So how long did you serve as this general chairman in charge person?
That role is just a one-year role. I served 5 years on the board.
Okay.
And then I came back and sat in for a little while on the board several years later. And I also did several committee things down the road later after, but there was nothing like the first one.
Did everybody get along?
Yeah, pretty much.
Isn't that great?
Pretty much, yeah.
But see, I think that was smart. I mean, I know you, and I think that's a smart move to pick you because you don't want to argue with anybody. You know, you just want to keep, you're going to stand up for yourself, but can't we all just make something happen here? Working together? That's great.
But that's how celebration began. And
what was that first theme? I forgot. What does it say?
The license plate merely says
Decatur Celebration.
I don't remember what the first theme was.
Uh-oh. We got to move on. We don't remember. Our memory is failing us. All right. Well, I know you did this, and I asked you, and we did this a little earlier, for you to write down some of the things you've served on. Can you remember any of them? You've typed them out for me. I've got it here. What have you been on?
Boards of directors?
Yeah, boards.
I've been on a lot of them. Sometimes I'd be on three or four at the same time, you know. And I should tell you that I've slowed down. I am on no boards and no committees as we speak now.
You learned to say no.
I learned to say no, yeah.
Well, that was a long time coming.
But I served on the Red Cross board. Don't cover up the microphone there.
Oh, no.
I served on the Red Cross board. I served on the Boys and Girls Club board, the YMCA, the...
Downtown City Council.
Yeah, Downtown Council. There used to be a Cancer Society board here, and I was on that board. And
anything related to your profession board?
Well, I was on the Illinois, State of Illinois Broadcasters Board.
Wow.
Broadcasters Association.
Do you volunteer for that, or do they pick you to do that?
They pick you.
Okay.
And I was on the State Board of the United Way. I'm a past president of the United Way board here in Decatur and was on the United Way of Illinois board. And on the United Way, I used to emcee their meetings long ago. And then I said, I want to get involved in the fundraising part of it. And I chaired a division and then eventually chaired the entire campaign. And I think the year I chaired the campaign, we did $2.4 million or something like that. And I think that was the first time we'd gone over $2 million. And it was fun. People were good to us.
Yeah, but they trusted your leadership, obviously.
Could have been.
Yeah, and now, so the same time you're doing all of this, you are still general manager of WSOI at this point.
I was, yeah. Yeah,
and you weren't on the radio then?
Well, here and there. I would record commercials. And if somebody needed help, I would fill in, you know.
But, oh, you did the commercials for your the people that were paying for advertising.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. And so what other public speaking have you done? I know you've done a lot.
Gosh, a lot of them. You ask any. I've been to every service club around here for many, many times as a speaker.
When you did the MC for Larry Foster.
You were there that night.
I was there that night. You did a great job. What was that, Rotary?
No, Sertoma Club.
Sertoma. Excuse me for not remembering that. Yeah, because that was wonderful honor for Larry.
Yes, it was.
To receive that.
He deserved it.
He did. Well, but you did a great job, and I know the MC is always important for this. And you've done, you've told me you did some auto racing announcing. Or, I laughed out loud, I'm sorry.
I don't look like a race driver.
No.
I raced at Indianapolis.
You did not.
I did.
You raced a car? Or did you just talk?
No, I didn't talk at all.
Oh, my goodness.
But it is an
interesting
story. Well,
you're from Indiana.
I am.
But tell me the
story. Indianapolis is my old hometown.
Okay.
But,
it's in your blood.
The whole story is this.
Okay.
Back years ago, or maybe still, I don't know, there was a wheel horse garden tractor company. And that company provided a garden tractor to each of the pit crews at the Indianapolis 500 for them to pull their car around the infield. They need to move around, you know. And they would, they had dealers all over the country. And the local dealers, if they won a contest, were asked to bring a local air personality to Indianapolis to drive one of those garden tractors in a race. The dealer here was one of the winners, and he invited me, and he drove me over to Indianapolis one day. We went to the 500. The first thing they do is they give you a jacket. I still have it, a racing jacket. It says the third annual Wheel Horse Indy 2.5. 2.5 miles, one lap. And then they drew numbers for starting positions, and I drew number 32. I was in the middle of the last row, the starting position. It was a standing start. They lined us up, got us on the tractors, said, Mrs. Tony Holman back then, this was back in the 70s, Mrs. Tony Holman says, gentlemen, start your engines. We all fired them up. And
your tractor?
The tractors, yes.
That's...
and so there we all lined up. It was a real pageant. We all had identical racing jackets, you know. And Pat Vidan, who is now deceased, I believe, waved the green flag, and away we go.
Sorry I brought this up.
some gentleman up in the front of the pack killed his engine, and the rest of the tractors started plowing into the back of him. I was in the back row, so I could let up on it and then get around them. Uh-huh. So I did. And I finished seventh. And then they took us all over to the Speedway Motor Inn, and we had lunch and
with a
whole bunch of the drivers there, the famous people were there at the lunch.
The real drivers,
and spoke. And I sat right across, at the table at lunch, I sat right across the table from the announcer for the Indianapolis 500, the PA announcer. He was extremely well known by all the broadcasters all over the country. And he said to me, and he saw my name tag, said WSOY, Decatur, Illinois. He said, how's Merrill Lindsay doing? He knew Merrill Lindsay. Merrill Lindsay was known by everybody. What a gentleman he was.
Yes.
And he had been my boss for many, many years. Uh-huh. Yeah. That's a true story. But that's the story of my racing at Indy. I did race at Indy. And I also was a PA announcer for automobile races all over. I saw so many demolition derbies. I said, I hope I never, ever see another demolition derby.
You know, truth is stranger than fiction. Yeah. the tractor race is funny. But motorcycles, yeah, demo derby, etc. You know, though, really, after I laughed about this, I thought, of course they need somebody with a good voice and how to handle a microphone, and there you were.
Yeah, that's true.
Did you know anything about it?
Well, I learned.
Okay. I mean, that's, because it would be saying, okay, or when you announce the Eisenhower basketball game, it's like, okay, but you got to give me, you know, how this works.
And I have never done basketball. I did volleyball.
Oh, see, it's probably the same thing.
When I owned the radio station in Shelbyville, Shelbyville had a very strong volleyball team. Okay. Somebody said, you ought to go broadcast this. I said, I've never heard of a volleyball broadcast. Mm-hmm. Well, I did it. I got a coach from the junior high to work with me because this person knew the game and knew all the players.
And the rules.
And the rules. And the two of us did the play-by-play. And it turns out, as the season developed, when we were there broadcasting, the crowd was much bigger. Interesting how that works.
Would anybody have had that radio in their ears?
Yeah, some did.
So they could finally know what was going on.
Yeah. And we even went to the state tournament. It was at the Prairie Capital Convention Center in Springfield. We broadcast live from there. Shelbyville finished, I think, third that year. I'm not sure. But we were the only radio station there. The next year, there were 11 radio stations there broadcasting the tournament.
How interesting.
Yeah.
That is great.
Yeah.
And why not?
Yeah, why not?
You know, why not? And a lot of people take their radios and listen to the football games so they know what's going on. They can't see.
Yeah.
So that's great. Okay, let's see. I have to ask you now about the wonderful Sunday Morning Easy. Now, you jumped at the end of your Bill Lyric interview into what you do now, which is
I'm in the insurance business.
In the insurance business, wealth management, if you will, and you are not working for anybody.
I work for myself and my clients.
Yes, and you just happen to be here in Larry Foster's office.
I'm an associate of Larry Foster. We work together on a lot of clients.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Okay. And so so that's what you're doing now. But then all of a sudden, starting when did is it Sunday Morning Easy?
7 years ago. Almost seven. It'll be 7 years in October. So when was that?
Oh, my gosh.
When I first left radio and went into the insurance business, I had four radio stations and a television station come to me and ask me to be an air personality. And I said, no.
I'm done.
And so I thought I was. And then, and then one day, Mary Ellen Burns, who owned and operated WXFM in Mount Zion, I saw her on the street downtown, and she asked me once again and I said, no. She said, would you consider a paid hobby? I said, wait a minute, that sounds interesting. And so I agreed to do that. I did mornings for a couple of hours in the morning from 6 to 8 a.m. on WXFM for a couple of years. And then I had some...
Is that Mount Zion?
Mount Zion.
And you and I were used to chat.
Yes. About the band concerts.
I would...
And
okay.
Then I had to have heart surgery. I had open heart surgery, 5 bypasses. And when that happened, I decided to slow down. So I quit doing that and was doing no radio except some commercials now and again. People call me and say, would you record commercials for me? So I did that, but didn't do any live radio. But I tried to stay up to date with what's going on in the radio business because that was my first love.
Sure.
And now and again, I would have lunch with Randy Miller. Randy was the owner of, I think, 6 Signals out of Taylorville. Studios are in Taylorville. And he had Kewaunee, and at one time he had Carlinville. And he had bought WHOW and WEZC in Clinton. And I'd have lunch with him now and again. And every time I'd have lunch with him, he would offer me a job, and every time I would say no. And one day, sitting right upstairs here at the Decatur Club at lunch, I said, Randy, I'll make you an alternate proposal. Instead of working for you, I'll buy from you. I'll buy your Sunday morning. He said, what do you mean? I said, I'll buy it. I'll pay you cash for your Sunday morning, and I will do my own program. I will play my own music. I will schedule my own guests. I'll do my thing. And it will be in the general mood that you set with your music program on WEZC. And I'll sell my own advertising, do the whole thing myself. I said, I don't promise you how long it'll last. I might last a month, I might last 3 months, might last a year, who knows, no promises.
How long did you think about that before you mentioned that to him?
2 minutes, maybe.
Really? You just had a thought that you'd like to do this?
Yeah. And it's been going in October, I think it'll be 7 years.
What was his immediate reaction? Are you crazy?
Well, it probably was, but he didn't say it that way.
Well,
he said, okay. And my agreement with Randy, basically, is that I won't get him in trouble with the law or the FCC.
That would be important.
And other than that, why, I do my own thing. And that's it.
What is your philosophy for that morning show?
Oh, philosophy?
Do you have a philosophy?
Yeah, a couple of them, I guess. Basically, one is be myself.
And you are.
I am what I am.
You
That's
are.
It. That's it. And I try to find interesting guests. Truth is, I don't find them. Most of them find me. People ask me, you know, how'd you get Dr. Ben Carson? I didn't. Dr. Ben Carson found me. I had him on here. Adlai Stevenson. How about Deidre Capone?
Oh.
Al Capone's niece. The last living member of the Capone family. She's been on the air with me twice.
Yes, and that mentorist was on this week.
The one, Kreskin.
Kreskin's
the amazing Kreskin. He's been on with me three times.
You guys are funny together. You have good chemistry with him.
Yeah.
But you are, this is my personal, professional opinion. You are so good with these interviews with these people. And sometimes they will stop. Mm-hmm. Their thought process, and then suddenly you pick them up and drag them out, and it keeps on going. But that's the philosophy. Be yourself. What else?
Do things that are familiar. Music, for the most part, I play familiar music.
Yes, you do.
I also throw in some surprises now and again.
Yes, you do. Some stale jokes.
Well, those are familiar.
I don't know. And I walk around going, oh, Orv, stop that.
Did I tell you about the scientist who invented a potion to grow hair?
No.
And it's so strong it'd grow hair on a billiard ball, it would. Didn't work, though. It slowed the game down too much.
Okay, there you go. And you also, where did this business, I will do 1 hour of musicals. Where'd that come from?
I don't know.
From the beginning, you just started doing that?
At the beginning, I started featuring a musical each week, but I would play a song here and a song there, and mm-hmm. some of the musical would be in each hour. I'm on the air for 4 hours.
Yeah.
I play one song. Our featured album this morning is this or that.
Okay. I like how you do it now.
Yeah. One day I decided, wait a minute, instead of splitting it up, let's do it all one chunk. Here's My Fair Lady this hour. Play all the music from My Fair Lady, etc.
Well, I know you have standards in your show. You never hear anything argumentative, although some of the people have their opinions. But I always remember when Jersey Boys was... was played, and you forgot until I heard it that some of the nasty dialogue is included in the lyrics of the songs.
Well, I made a mistake that morning. I didn't forget.
Oh, you knew that?
No, I didn't know.
You didn't know it? Well,
I didn't know. The mistake I made was not listening to that album in advance. It had been recommended to me. People had been to the motion picture and said it was wonderful.
Great music.
Yeah.
It is great music,
but they said, why don't you play that on the air? Well, okay, I got a copy of it, and I started playing it on the air. And this guy started using language that I wouldn't have on the air.
Did you get calls?
Yes.
I was laughing because I thought, let's see you get out of this one, buddy.
Well, you know how I got out of it. After the third time that language was on the air, I said, that's enough of that. I cut it off.
That's what you said. Exactly.
That's
enough of that.
And I said, why do we watch that on television or watch it, pay money to go to the movies, but you and I are both uncomfortable listening to it on the radio. Why is that? And I know the answer. The answer is that radio is such a personal medium. You listen as an individual, and it's highly personal. It's yours. What you're hearing is yours.
Yes.
There may be thousands of people listening, but you, each one hears it alone. It's all in your ears. It's yours. It's highly personal. And so you take it personally.
And I'm sure I wasn't the only one going, okay, Orv, I know exactly what you are going to do, my friend, because you do not want that out there. Our interview time is drawing to a close. Please tell me about your very talented granddaughter.
Well, I have two talented granddaughters.
Okay.
And a talented grandson.
Wow, that's growing.
Yeah. My oldest grandchild is my grandson. His name is Graham. His first name is my...
Love it.
And he plays guitar. I have an old Gibson guitar at my home. It's about the same age I am. It's old. It's the first Gibson model in which an electric pickup was put. And I play it just living room guitar. I'm not a guitarist. Mm-hmm. But Graham met that guitar when he was 4 or 5 years old, played it around with it, you know, in my mm-hmm. home. And when he got old enough to get involved in music, he was playing trumpet when he was in the fifth grade. But he switched to guitar when he got into high school, and he is now a fine guitar player. But he plays, and he plays with two different bands, but he plays rock music.
Oh, okay, Graham.
And I can't stand that stuff.
In case you're listening, Graham.
My oldest granddaughter is Whitney, and Whitney is still in school, in college, and she is 32 years old as we speak today, and still studying, and she, I believe, is going to, but she also works full-time.
Okay.
I believe she's going to be a court reporter when she finishes all her schooling. That's her goal, I believe. And she sang in choirs for a long time, and she's a beautiful, stylish girl. Oh, just beautiful. So proud of her.
I was going to say, I think you are, Grandpa.
The third grandchild, granddaughter, Emma. Emma is married. She is 28 years old, I believe, and she has no kids. She works full-time at an insurance agency. And sings with a band. She sings with the band Imagine That. And she's good.
Now that's the name of the band.
Imagine that. Okay. Band, yes.
Okay.
Yes. And they play all around Central Illinois.
You've played her song a couple times.
I do.
I love it. She's excellent.
Yeah, she is. And
sweet.
Oh, yeah. She is very good. And the band plays music, most of the music I can understand and hear and enjoy. Some of the music is a little too rock for me, but not all of it. They play a lot of stuff. The song Hello, which Adele made.
Oh, yeah, right.
Oh, she's so good at that. Emma is, my granddaughter Emma is so good with that song. It's just wonderful. When she starts singing that, the crowd just stops.
Do you have a record of that, CD of that you could play on your show someday?
I have played it.
Okay, I haven't heard that one. There's another song.
What I play, I recorded with a recorder much like the one you're using right here. They were playing in Springfield one night at an outdoor venue one summer evening. And I went there, and I stood there with my little tape recorder and recorded that. These digital recorders, by the way, are outstanding. They're amazing gizmos.
Yes.
And I recorded her singing that, and I have played that on the air a time or two.
Oh, I'm sorry I missed that. Well, Orv Graham, it has been so much fun to interview you. This will probably be it. We're going to leave you alone now. But you are now safely ensconced in the oral history section of the Decatur Public Library for time eternal here. We have your voice for posterity, and my life is better because of you. So Thank you, my friend.
Thank you, Shirley.